I mean, most entrepreneurs don't have their MBA. We didn't go to business school. We got into this because we had this calling, something we were good at. For me, it was marketing and strategy. I'm great at that. But now I'm being asked to be a CEO and deal with finances and things that I just had never even thought about.
Hello and welcome to Business Underdog, the podcast where we bring you inspiring stories for the aspiring entrepreneur. I'm your host, Eric Reamer, and I'm thrilled to have you join us on this exciting journey. So I am so excited for listeners to hear this next podcast that we have with Krista Ritma. Krista is the CEO of Authentic Audience and a friend, an entrepreneur, and really just a brand setter. She is a really unique, amazing individual. But why I think this is so important and so valuable for everyone to listen to, and I'll tell you what I learned from it, which was super cool. Not only the regular stuff that all of us as entrepreneurs deal with in terms of, you know, how do we more effectively hire and fire and all the challenges and overcoming our doubts and our fear and having mentorship, all that exists. But why Krista was so unique and why I wanted to join the podcast is Krista is focused on truly authentic brand marketing and bringing who you are, your frequency, your vibration out into the world in a way that connects with other people, that brings it back to yourself and your business. And if you think about a lot of service-based businesses, it doesn't matter yoga studios who she works with and solar companies who she worked with or plumbers and electricians and HVAC, most of these organizations, they have a story to tell. And most of them are not telling the story, so they can't differentiate themselves in the marketplace. And so I was fascinated by the things that she's doing at Authentic Audience. It's great to hear some of the stories of a young, growing entrepreneur and overcoming some really difficult challenges that she's had along the way. And I was just so excited to be part of it, even though I've known Krista for a little bit. I didn't know a lot of the story. I didn't know the whys behind it. I wasn't even fully aware of some of the great things your organization does. So sit back, relax, listen, and I hope you enjoy. I am just so excited. Krista, I'm so excited to have you here today for two reasons. One, not only am I going to hear your story, which I don't even know really, the whole story of why you started, you know, Authentic Audience and all the trials and tribulations that all entrepreneurs go through, but because what you do is so unique, and how you do it is so unique, and what you provide to your business clients, mostly small business clients, how that could be helpful to all the people that listen that are small business clients that don't have the access to someone of your talent. So really the combination of everything just honestly excites me. So welcome, Krista.
Thanks, Eric. It's such an honor. You're like my biggest inspo in business. So I'm happy to be here.
Well, I appreciate that. And I mean this sincerely, I'm excited to start off with just understanding what was your inspiration? I don't think we ever talked about it. What was the inspiration to be an entrepreneur, to start Authentic Audience?
You know, I really had zero desire to be an entrepreneur at all. When I started Authentic Audience, I was living on my boat in the San Francisco Bay and just really having a solid 9-to-5 lifestyle. So I would turn off at 5 o'clock and I would go to yoga and I would live my life. And somewhere along the way, I decided that I could do it differently. And it was really within the world of marketing and advertising and seeing this like gap for purpose-led business and sales. And at the time, I was doing a lot of projects and marketing for yoga studios, yoga teacher trainings, yoga teachers, and seeing, okay, there's got to be this more heartfelt way to do business because a lot of these businesses are like so purpose-led. And so the standard way of doing marketing or advertising just wasn't really working. And so my initial mission was the more butts on mat, the better the world. And so I just wanted to help people sell spots, whether it was at their yoga studio or whether it was on yoga retreats. And This expanded in such a major way after that, but that's really how it began. And then it was Clay, my now husband, my boyfriend at the time, who was seeing what I was doing for all of these different studios and, you know, growing my own brand at the same time. And he saw, his background's in business development. And so he was like, there's a business here. And so we joined forces in 2017 and started Authentic Audience, which is now today, you know, digital marketing and creative ad agency. At the time, it was the heyday of the Facebook tracking pixels. So people were getting like 10x ROI. We could retarget people for an entire year after they hit your website. Like, it was just like the wild, wild west. And we really were able to show small business owners what was possible in what otherwise would normally have been bigger corporate agencies. All of a sudden, like, the Facebook tracking pixel, you know, really made marketing small businesses possible in so many ways. And we were like at the forefront of that.
So, you know, you and I talk about this all the time. So you made that shift from 9 to 5 to entrepreneurial, partly because you truly wanted to help, you know, the people you're working with more effectively, which is why most entrepreneurs actually start the business, which is amazing. But with that comes uncertainty, comes lack of paycheck, comes lack of consistency, that I don't care what level your business ultimately gets to, and you've had so much success, that journey is difficult, you know, and everyone deals with it. Because when you take that first leap, it all sounds good until you're like, I need to get a client next month or something. So I'd just love to hear from your perspective. You know, what are the biggest challenges that you have faced? You know, how you overcome them? Just kind of give the listener the understanding of, it's freaking hard. We know it's hard. And what do you do to overcome that?
It's so hard. And I think one of the beautiful things I've learned about entrepreneurship, because I truly love it now, I love it. I love all the different pillars of revenue and having my hand in so many different businesses and voices and people. And it's just the absolute best. And it's being free as an entrepreneur that you can do whatever you want. And so, for example, if we're having a hard month and I'm not selling, you know, a certain thing or something happens, I can pivot and launch something else. And I feel that I've really learned how to do that with my gifts and with my skills and with my network. And so now it's really always about, for me, find that next client that has the problem you can solve for them. And it's just one at a time. And when you find that client and you can start to solve their problems, they have more problems. And then you can solve those problems. And then they become a long-term retainer client. And then all is well in the world. And so I think for me, it's just that access point and taking it day by day. But if I put like the pending doom of the next 6 months on my shoulders today, that's going to make me a really ineffective leader. And I think that's the trap a lot of us get stuck in. And you have to be okay with not knowing where your revenue is coming from 6 months from now. And I think that has been one of the hardest parts for me, and just trusting it day by day and not knowing if they'll re-sign in 6 months or what's going to happen, and having payroll and, you know, just having it be, you know, a constant game of profit margin and team and all of these things that I have absolutely zero experience in whatsoever. I mean, most entrepreneurs don't have their MBA. We didn't go to business school. We got into this because we had this calling, something we were good at. For me, it was marketing and strategy. I'm great at that. But now I'm being asked to be a CEO and deal with finances and things that I just had never even thought about.
Krista, how big is your team? How many people do you have, including contractors, working with you?
Including contractors, I have about, you know, 15 or 20 people that I'm working with regularly. And then I'm a fractional CMO for another company. And there's about 10 to 15 people that I support and manage over there. So it became very quickly something that was just me and my business partner, and I was the business and I was executing the business. And now there's this whole team of people looking to me to have answers.
You know, my biggest challenge when I was starting my first company, it doesn't matter if it was the first, second, third, or fourth company, you get to the point and the question is around, you know, how do you manage the doubts? Because what I would always say is, you know, everyone thinks that I have it under control because they're looking at me.
Right.
And I look around and be like, well, who am I looking at? Like, well, like who, like, what do I do here? Because everyone just assumes that I have all my shit together and I know what's going to happen. But who am I supposed to believe in those moments when I have doubts? I'm just curious, when you have those moments of doubt, because and you put it really well earlier, that try to stay in the present, don't look 6 months forward. But I don't care who you are, doubt seeps in at, you know, moments of the journey.
Every day.
So what do you do? How do you manage those moments of doubts?
Well, I call you. I mean, that's true.
That is true.
That's true, Eric.
But besides that.
Yeah, I think I have, this is why mentorship and advisors and spiritual practice and spiritual teachers, I think, are so important. And it's like my counsel, you know, and so you're on that counsel. You know, some of my other mentors that are on that counsel, and you put things in perspective for me. And I think one of the hardest parts of my doubt is I don't know what I don't know. And that's really hard, because when I have the information, I'm a great leader. I can make great decisions. And I've now reached this level of business where I don't know what I don't know. And so I have to ask for help. And so I think in those moments, getting comfortable with asking for help. And so just recently, I asked my investors for help. And they came through in such a major way. And it just can be this really uncomfortable position. And I think for me, it's either been to going to my mentors, people that I trust, to really remind me of my own power and capabilities, because really at the end of the day, it's up to me. And I think we can give our power away very easily if we don't understand, or I'm delegating, or this and that. But having that like self-trust that this is what I'm doing now and I'm capable of this and, you know, I have the tools and I can ask people for help. But it's really hard. It's really hard. The self-doubt is like the loudest. And I think the more in service to your calling you are, the louder the self-doubt sometimes.
But, you know, you said something that I completely agree with. Your acknowledgement that you don't know what you don't know, and the vulnerability and the openness to actually seek out what that creates. I know it creates it within our relationship. There's no judgment. I have zero judgment. And you know, when you talk to me, I'm just trying to help you and I'm not judging. Why doesn't Kristen know that? Because I think a lot of times entrepreneurs feel if I ask somebody something, or ask somebody, whether that's a peer or a potential mentor, they'll think less of me. They won't think I have my shit together. They won't think I know what I'm doing. Your ability to kind of let that ego go away and be like, I know I don't know this, or maybe I know this a little bit, but Eric, you've done this, you know, 20 years right. longer than I have. So what can I learn from your knowledge? And I've done that as a lot of my career. And you find those people that, you know, you're not being judged. You know that they're actually, they are focused on your best interest, and you can come into them very authentically and very vulnerable and very open. And that allows you not only to get the answers you were hoping, but actually to grow. Because, you know, all of this for me and you, we all talk about it. This is just all our, this is all our growth journey. It's all we're doing, right? We're just, these are our platforms for growth. So if we're not using them to grow like that, you know, we're missing out. So I love that you said that. And I see it real time when we talk. And it's so important that, you know, our listeners understand that finding those people that can provide that platform for them to be honest and open and vulnerable and scared without being judged is really critical.
People equals my success. Like the people I've hired, invested in, sought out, you know, had mentorship with, I call them my vision holders. You know, there's something that you do in your business, how you are in your life. Like for us as entrepreneurs, I think it's very holistic. It's body, mind, business. It doesn't really turn off. And so I look to these people who are also entrepreneurs and also like really passionate about their work, but I see that they have like a whole life and they know how to relax and they have a work-life balance. So I seek out things in mentors that, you know, you see, okay, there's that sparking something in me. That's a vision of mine. So why wouldn't we just ask them and like shortcut instead of making it really hard on ourselves? And I think for whatever reason, a lot of us like high achieving, high productive people who become entrepreneurs, we think it needs to be really hard. And so it's this limiting belief of, oh, wait, there's actually people here who can help me and who I have fostered relationships with. And I think that's the one thing I'm still really good at to this day is the relationship building. And if you can do that well, also that's marketing. But if you can do that well, then you'll never feel like completely alone, which is the scariest part of entrepreneurship.
It is. Well, I want to come back to the doubt and the employees and the cash flow and all that. But I want to move on to something more fun. But before we do that, as we move on to the fun stuff, you know, a good kind of transition to that is, you know, what is the one thing you're most proud of so far? You had no intention of being an entrepreneur. You've built this business with a lot of help from Clay and friends and family. But really, Krista, this has been your journey and this has been your energy holding that space. What are you most proud of so far?
Honestly, my team. I think it's really, for me, great leadership and culture is about mission, cause, belief, and getting your team sort of rallied around something bigger than a paycheck or, you know, ROI or whatever that is. And I just feel so grateful that they're so excited to work for me and to work with me and be a part of this and that they believe in it too, because it's one thing to be like delusionally confident in your own vision. I mean, we have to be, but in order to have a full team of these really incredibly talented women that are better than me. I mean, that's what I'm proud of, is finding people out there that are, you know, better, smarter, hiring them, letting them do their job, and building a culture where we're like really supportive of each other. In our industry, women run businesses, women own businesses make up 1% of the 40,000 ad agencies in the United States.
That's crazy.
So I'm proud of that. Yeah. And our success.
It should be. That's amazing. So I want to switch in a little bit into the kind of what you do in terms of how authenticity utilized in kind of brand messaging really helps differentiate and connect with customers more effectively, and how you think that is really across the board, whether you are a yoga studio, a marketing agency, what you do, you own a plumbing company, electrical company, how does authenticity and telling your story, you know, allow you to differentiate what you're doing in the marketplace?
Well, people follow people. And so it's a lot easier when there's a face, when there's a message, when there's somebody willing to earn that trust of the customer. And if you think about some of the more successful brands and businesses like Apple, for example, which is a great example of somebody that had an incredible personal brand, you know, not necessarily, you know, good or bad, but really made Apple what it is. And when you can feel that art, I think it's somebody's art, it's somebody's vision. You know, I think the easiest way to describe it is with music. But I think it's really important to storytell. And it's how we build relationships. It's how we cultivate belonging. It's how we earn trust. It's like every psychological check mark for building a real relationship. And so for me, if we can just focus on that in marketing, which is just storytelling, it's just good storytelling and building resonance and commonality. And whether that's through, you know, I have a client and friend who talks about building the bridge. He's an NFL Super Bowl champion. And how important when you're working with a new team it is to just find that commonality and build that bridge right away. You're getting paid a lot of money. You're expected to win. The stakes are high. And that's how I feel marketing is. The stakes are high. Like, there's a lot of noise out there. And so we have a real opportunity to facilitate something real. And it turns out that's what works right now. Like, people want real. People crave that. even if you look at like what's doing best in advertising, it's user generated content. Like people want to see real people doing the things. And so the more real you can be, the better.
Imagine that, right? I was, this is a really funny story. This is years ago. I was selling kind of a big kind of partnership with this large, you know, banking client that was going to private label our software and sell it to the banking clients. And we had this relationship, and with this, the relationship guy on the other side, we're going back and forth, and we actually closed a deal. And I developed a friendship with this guy. And he said to me one time as a friend, he goes, "Hey, Eric, you know, I just want to compliment you. We do a lot of training at this XYZ bank. I won't say who it is, about trying to sell, you know, authentically. And we do this." He goes, "What is your tactics? What do you do? Because it's so, you sell, you've done a really good job." I'm like, I'm just being me. You know, I'm not really trying to do anything, right?
And that's why you're a vision holder for me, because you have this really unique, you know, job. You're very successful and you're one of the most authentic people. Like, you're Eric. And so you just bring that to whatever you're doing, to whatever advice you're giving, to whatever setting you're in. And it works, but I think you have to be really confident and have the right mindset in order to be able to show up as yourself. And a lot of people are trying to be everything but, especially when it comes to marketing, which is so backwards, but it's just the way, you know, even if you think about marketing and advertising 40 years ago, it was billboards, it was Coca-Cola, it was Marlboro. Like, it has just now shifted to this new space and anybody can market, and with the right dollars and the algorithm, you can get in front of anyone you want. And so what are you going to say? Like, that matters.
Right. And when you think about your value and your passions around the authenticity part of it, has there ever been a time where that has actually been a detriment in terms of you getting a deal or you holding your values of that authenticity? And I can imagine some of the people that you do work with may think they're being authentic, but they're kind of full of shit. And, you know, how do you work with them to provide that, you know, that story when it's not at a core level truly authentic?
Well, you know, advertising is funny because the people that have big experiences in that way, like you said, that come off inauthentic, and they're not ready to be seen. And I think when you invest in paid advertising, you're saying, like, I'm willing to invest dollars in being seen in front of those people I'm here to create and buy for. And if you're not ready to be seen, it probably means there's like something inauthentic going on there. And so I get to witness a lot of things that come up when it comes time to actually turn on a campaign, because it means real traffic is going to find you, in that self-doubt of like, what if people don't buy, or what, you know, it just, all of this stuff comes up. And I think the more confident you can be in your art, in your work, is like what's going to be the magnetic thing that attracts people and you're really excited about it. And so I tell people all the time, like, I can't be more excited about what you're selling than you. And that's like, that's people are not excited to sell their, and I'm like, I can't be more excited about this book launch. I've had two clients this week. And I'm like, do you know how stoked I would be if I was publishing with HarperCollins this week? Like, let's get it together and get excited for this. And so I think sometimes when it comes time to market our own stuff, we've put so much time into the building, the scaling, the product, the engineers, like everything that goes into it, that by the time you come to market it, you're almost like resentful that you have to. In a lot of ways, but it's like the most important piece. This is like you saying, this is, you are the bridge to whatever it is that you are selling and sharing with the world. And so it just becomes to me about making sure people know that authenticity wins. Like, it's so cliche, but it works every time. Like, the more real, the more honest, the more transparent, like with the reason why we're successful, we show people our numbers. We tell people what we do. Like, what a radical idea of sharing our strategy with people. Like, it's just about being true. And I think that's what you can feel. Like, that's what people who want to do business with you can feel. You know, that's what makes it an energy-rich experience for people.
I love that. And how does, I know you use a lot of storytelling in your marketing. How does storytelling kind of get that message and really relay that authenticity to the end customer? How do people do that effectively? And by the way, a second question, does that work for not a book launch, but, you know, can a plumbing company with, you know, 12 trucks on the road, you know, authentically tell their story and make a difference in the marketplace?
Yes. Tell me what makes you unique. Are you family run? What areas are you servicing? There's just so much. I'm thinking of one of my solar tech consults right now. I think almost 10x their business in the last year with paid advertising. And it's all about family run. And it makes the biggest difference, I think, when it's coming up again. Like, people care who they're buying from. And I think we care more than we think. And so if we're telling a story as part of that, and it can be a part of our culture, it can be a client success story, like, you know, you can go above and beyond and infuse more of your gifts into whatever it is that you're doing. And so I think a great example of this is, I was trying to think of a great example for a plumbing company, but I'm thinking of a company that sells website templates. That could be a pretty boring email list to be a part of. They just sell, you know, different website templates, but the founder is really innovative and an amazing writer. And so she writes funniest email column every week, and it has grown their email list so big that when they go to launch new templates, they like sell out. And she's bringing her experience as a writer, and it's so funny and it's so real. And it's like stories about her week, her children. It has nothing to do with email marketing at all, but she's like found this really fun way of connecting with everybody. And it's like, how can you bring more of you into it? For example, you know, I don't know a lot of advertisers who are reikiing their clients, you know, before sessions. I teach business education and body mind business. And I have this like spiritual element to just who I am. And it comes through in our writing and in our website and our content. So it sort of attracts other people that are on that frequency. And so it can be really nice to think about how you can make it as little about you as possible and as much about your customer and client, but use your story, use your experience, use your skills to show that you are the expert and help them. And so instead of talking about me, I'll think about, okay, who's my dream client out there? And what's an email I can send, a post I can send, an ad I can write that's going to solve something for them today, that's going to be in service to them today? And usually it means bringing in my personal touch. And that's how we can really be in service. And people can feel it.
Well, you know, you use the word frequency, and I'll take that into like vibration. And if you think about, everything comes back to the vibration, the frequency you're putting out there. But when you step back, you think about a lot of the people that listen are service-based owners, and they could be electricians, plumbers, HVAC, landscapers, yoga studios, you know, and often when you think about you hiring an electrician, it really is like they're a rowboat in the ocean. You just end up with them often, right? Because very few of them are trying to differentiate themselves. Very few of them are actually putting their vibration out there specifically so people could connect back with them, which in and of itself creates a huge market opportunity because no one's doing it. Just doing it a little bit would be huge.
Just so a little bit.
Totally. So what would you do? How would you recommend that somebody, you know, can make sure that their brand is authentic, that it actually is putting the right vibration out in an industry, maybe historically, that doesn't play like that, right? That isn't playing in that game. I'd just love to get your view on that.
I think it's a great question for like that specifically, like think about electrician, like sending out a holiday card in the neighborhood with, you know, some type of like funny message or note on it. Like, how can you go that extra step after somebody hires you? What's the follow-up email? Like, what is the touch points that somebody gets to experience you? And in every one of those touch points, you get to leave an impression. And I call it the four seasons approach at Authentic Audience. So I tell my team all the time, I don't care if you close. It's not your job. I'm in sales. Like, I'm the one that is closing. What I need you to do is leave an amazing impression and leave an amazing taste in their mouth. So whether they buy or not, they're going to go out and they're going to remember this experience, and we're going to stay top of mind. And I think it's so easy to do that. You can think of those times that you're so grumpy, you're so hangry, you pull over to get gas, and there's like the loveliest attendant at a 7-Eleven that just totally changes your whole day. Yeah. And you can be that person, especially in an industry in advertising and marketing. There's not a lot of us that are like really wanting to infuse energy, service, love. And if you're doing that in an industry where it's not typically the thing, like in a yoga studio, for example, hopefully your yoga teacher is like really purpose-led and exuding a lot of love, but your plumber might not be. And so imagine if you show up and you have the business card, or you leave like, you know, an extra magnet, like the solar clients that I have, they've now created magnets, you know, in addition to it. And it's just, how do you stay top of mind? And just that little extra step. Yeah. And for us as an agency, we send client gifts, and people are like shook when they receive this gift. If you're closing somebody at like $2,000 or $20,000 or $2 million, you can afford like a really nice $200 gift. Put it in your budget, you know? And I think one of my mentors talks about like the weekly thank you. And every Monday, write a thank you note to somebody, whether it's a past client, whether it's somebody you want to work with. And it's just having that energy of being top of mind and leaving a good taste in people's mouths. Like, if you are an electrician or you are a plumber, you're going into somebody's home. Like, that's a very vulnerable experience. And so, you know, I'm thinking about the plumber we used in Santa Cruz. He was such high vibes. We would wait. Like, we didn't want some random guy to come. We wanted him, you know? And then that's how you become memorable and the favorite. And, you know, we've had people say to us, I've never had anyone take the time to explain paid advertising to me. I can tell you really care about it. And hopefully, if you're an entrepreneur, you really care about what you're doing. So just show that, like, go that extra little touch.
Isn't it amazing that we're, at least for me, I was actually talking about this yesterday with my assistant, that when somebody provides great service in the service industry, I'm shocked. Like, I'm not, yes, like, it's the expectation is at best neutral, usually not good.
Yeah.
And then somebody follows up. I had a plumber come over, and similar, he starts telling me that, you know, he started his own business, you know, 13 years ago, and he's got 8 trucks in the field, and every single person he's been with him has been with him. They never leave because he tries to pay them as much where they can make before they could. They make it as much with him, or they could make on their own. So he doesn't try to, you know, push down, you know, all of his earnings against them, so they could actually stay with them. And he goes, the continuity has allowed this business to be really, really good, because I'm not constantly training new people who just aren't that qualified. And, right, and once he said that, I'm like, dude, I wish I knew that. I mean, now I'll never use anybody but him or his organization, but that would have been an amazing way for him to talk about in an advertising what he does and who he is, because that truly resonated, at least with me. And I'm sure it resonates with other people as well. That's really interesting.
Totally. I think it's just about having those little extra mission-led, whatever it is that you care about. You know, you think about Costco, how their whole thing is giving value back to the customer, and they make their money through memberships. And, you know, it's like you stick to that and it works. And it's because you can feel the service to the customer. You know, people are loyalists for Costco. And it's like, because they really are in service to the customer, it's true. And so it needs to be true. But if you're an entrepreneur, chances are it is true and you really care about what you're doing. And it can be easy, going back to everything else, to let all of this other stuff take you down. You're in scarcity, you're in fear. It can be really hard to feel in service and excited and, you know, high vibes. But when I sit down to write my emails, to pay payroll, whatever it is, I'm very aware of the energy I'm bringing to that moment. And I think that's what we can control as business owners in all moments. And I do think that that ripples out, you know, whatever it is we're thinking about. If we're thinking, oh, I'm not enough, this client is never going to sign. Well, our beliefs equal the result. And so if I can sit down and feel really good about my week and go through and have the right energy that I'm bringing to it, it makes all the difference. And so I think we have a lot more control. And as entrepreneurs, we tend to like to be like out of control or, you know, feel like we don't have any control, but we actually do. And if we can like take that pending doom of the next year or even the next 90 days, and it's like, what can I do today to move the needle, to close one sale, to close those five clients? Like there's an action you can take and there's a service you can sort of shift into that energy. And it just makes all the difference for me because it's a stressful time.
Well, you touched on something, which is the kind of, you know, every entrepreneur deals with this, right? So what energy you bring to the table, how you interact, what you're going to do. Oh, by the way, now you have these 10, 15 employees. And how do you deal with, you know, I'd love to get to some employee challenges you've had because your energy, as much as you kind of create the, you're holding the space for everybody and it's your energy that's going to go out the door. But at the end of the day, it's not you. It may not be you calling that customer, but you know, you're servicing that customer. And how do you manage your team in a way that allows them to both be their authentic self, but also bring the energy and vibration that you want every one of your customers to feel?
Mental health is really important, I think. And it's something that I make sure that I call out. So if somebody is on my team call and they are having an experience or they are having a low day, I'm going to, you know, acknowledge it pretty directly. One of my leadership coaches calls this, you know, real-time feedback. And so there's never an opportunity to say, oh, hey, can we talk? Because just in the moment, it's like, are we okay? And if we're burned out and if we need to take a day or if you need to go to the doctor, like my team knows that the energy they bring is really important. We start every week with a word. So everyone shares a word that we can sort of hold them accountable for coming back to that week. And so whether it's grace or presence or efficiency or whatever the word is, it's sort of like a way that I use to help us all drop into like the vibration of the week together every Monday. And I'm just making sure that they're okay. And I think it's really important to, yeah, I mean, you don't want, so you need to be able to rely on your team. Yeah. And so what I have done is if there is a mistake, if there is something that goes out wrong, if it's low energy, and the hardest thing I've had to learn as a leader is it's my fault. I didn't provide them with the tools. They aren't feeling like they have enough time. They're feeling overworked. Like for whatever reason, I'm failing them. And so I hold pretty high expectations. So they know at this point, like, take a beat, go for a walk, like ask for the time off, whatever it is, because when you do show up here, like it's really important that we show up a certain way and people want to work with us because of that. You know, we give off this culture that other people want to be a part of. And so upholding that is like a big part of my job.
And it's
because if they're okay and they're rested, if they're mentally stable, then like everything works.
No,
and so
I love
burnt out people, like it's going to start breaking.
So instead, you put it all, you burn yourself out. That's really good of you.
Exactly.
You know,
that's exactly.
that's what I'm hearing is everyone's good. And I'm going to burn on both ends here. But so, yeah. And I totally understand under the leadership philosophy of, if someone's not doing a good job, I didn't do a good enough job getting them. And that's awesome. Right. I totally agree to an extent. But as an entrepreneur and somebody that's a young, growing entrepreneur, there's times when just people, it just doesn't work. And no matter what you do and how you hold this space, when do you make that decision? How do kind of new entrepreneurs know when they're not used to it and it's uncomfortable and they don't want to do it? How do they know when they need to move on from an employee?
it's really hard. And I think I've waited far too long, far too many times. And you lose a lot of money. Like, I think one of the biggest things that I have learned is when I get an intuitive hit, like the number one way I can stay true to myself and my business is shorten the time between me getting an intuitive hit and then taking the action. So oftentimes I'll get this intuitive hit about an employee or somebody, and I'm like, wow, this is like really medium work. Like, this is not good. And then it will take me 3 to 6 months to fire that person or take action. And to me, that's just, I was out of integrity that full time because I knew. And I think as the CEO or as the person in charge, I was just talking to our mutual friend about this week, like there's only one person in charge for a reason. And when you know, it's like your job to take that action, like you are steering the ship. And so I've lost enough money, I think, at this point, because then what happens is, you know, you wait 3 or 6 months, you finally fire this person, you realize how much money you've lost in the last 3 years employing this person or whatever it is. And you just, you know that you should have taken the action sooner. And yeah. So one of my husband's mentors early on said, fire soon and like often. And that was one of the things he took away. And so after a couple of times of me not firing soon enough, I think I now, like the most recent one, I'm proud to say, like I had the intuitive hit over the summer and I called one of my team members and was like, hey, I know this is super random, but I'm pretty sure I need to fire this person today. And she goes, oh, I couldn't agree more. Like the thing is you're the leader. So they're not going to all say, oh yeah, totally, I agree, you know, until you say it. So as soon as I said that, she's like, oh yeah, I feel the exact same way. I picked up the phone. I called the gal. I said, how do you think things are going? She basically fired herself. And I felt so proud of myself that day because I really listened. Like when you ask your business, when you ask who, like it reveals. And so I was in this asking, trusting phase that morning and was like, what needs to shift? And it was like, this person needs to go. They're not in it. And sure enough, it cleared so much energy. And so I think it's become a lot easier. It's never easy when you that realization of like every day that goes by, not only do I have to pay this person, but then I have to find someone and deal with the emotional journey of this. And that's a lot of work. So sometimes you'll keep someone, like I kept somebody for a year just because I was so afraid to train someone new. And so I think really having that self-trust, like, you know, who the A players are and okay. Who's going to get you to the next level. And if you have somebody on your team for longer than 3 months or 6 months, when you've known, like, you got to do something. And it's like, it's not easy, but it's why you're in charge.
And you said so many things that I agree with. And it's not fair to the team because the team all knows, no. Right? They all know around you.
They all know. Everyone can feel it.
Totally. And you lose credibility by not making the decision. There's a, you know, he's now older and I'm a little older, but Jack Welch was a CEO of GE for many years, very, very successful CEO. And his quote was, if you think you should be firing somebody, you're already probably 3 months too late. And it's very unmillennial of you to say fire fast, fire often. But the reality is it's a disservice, not only to the their employees, to your coworkers, but actually to the individual. I realized this along early on with your story about this, the woman kind of firing herself. If somebody isn't doing well, like my goal, and I know yours as well, Krista, I want everyone to freaking fly. I want them to be so successful. I want them to be feeling amazing about themselves. And if they're at the point that I need to let them go, they're feeling it too. They don't want to feel like that. And I don't want them to feel like that. So if they're not willing to step off, you have to give them the grace to push them because you know, they'll find somewhere that actually is a better fit. They'll find that platform where they can fly. But if they're afraid and you're afraid, to your point, you know, both people are doing a disservice to each other. Yeah. So I couldn't agree more, but it's difficult. I mean, it's really hard.
That exact example, firing that person over summer, she's completely like going in her own direction now. And it's like breaking up with somebody. It's like, if it's off, if it's wrong, every day that you stay, you're actually, you know, they're missing out on meeting their person. And so I think it's really hard and we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. But at the end of the day, like, we can't be responsible for everybody. And I think that's a lesson that I have to keep reminding myself as I scale, because having that expansive mindset of, oh, one day maybe I will have 100 or 200, like, chances are I'm gonna have to fire some more people. And so having that sort of energy of, in order to grow, we have to let go and we have to shed. And it's not always a bad thing. I mean, we've been fired by on dozens of projects. I've been in business for 10 years. You know, I get fired all the time. And it's like, it's sometimes I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, I would have paid not to have to work with that person. It's just one of those things that it's like, I think either way, whichever end of it you're on, you can see it as a real opportunity for the next project, for the next opportunity. And it can be really hard. I think so much of entrepreneurship is mindset, truly.
I love that. And we've spent a good amount of time giving people kind of the realities that we all deal with and the challenge of the business. So let's go forward in terms of where do you see kind of marketing, digital marketing, authentic market heading? And how does an organization make sure that they are not going to get left behind? And what do they need to do today to kind of be prepared for the next stage of marketing with AI, with all the things that are happening? And then think about your clients. Again, I keep using a plumber because those are a lot of our clients, but we have yoga studios too, where we have dental offices. And you think about those professionals who are really good at what they do. They're thinking about how to use AI to market more effectively. They're not right. thinking about, you know, how to get my brand voice out there. So what should they be thinking about today so they can be more effective in the future?
I think what you can automate. I think people are really afraid of automation and AI taking over. And I just feel that the human prompt is always going to be really important. Like, even the robots in my house, you know, I have a robot vacuum in our kitty litter, like, they're breaking all the time. Like, you still need a human to control the robots. And I think being like in control of your robot army is how I sort of want you to think about it, and think about everything that you can do to automate what's not you in your genius zone. And so there's so much you can automate in marketing. I know very few people that really enjoy marketing. It's why I have a company. It's why I exist, because most companies want to do everything but. And so what I would come in and do right away is look at how many ways I can automate what you're doing, repurpose your content, diversify it across platforms. Like, with AI right now, you could take this podcast and turn it into 5 blogs, 16 social media posts, an entire workshop with a companion worksheet in about 10 minutes. I now have thousands of hours of me teaching, talking, right, like, strategies, et cetera. And instead of being afraid of, you know, me losing that, I can't wait to get that into a place where I can turn that into so many different educational tools or blogs or SEO or resources. And it doesn't need my time. So I think what we can do is think about how efficient we can be with our time. And there are so many tools out there right now that have allowed me to free up, even on the marketing side. Like, we're using competitor analysis that I used to have to go in and like create a competitor analysis. Now for $100 a month, I can run a competitor analysis on any website ever. And so that makes me freed up to do things like this, to teach different classes, to, you know, and to really make the most of my time. So I think it's actually about freeing up your time. And figuring out, especially from a marketing standpoint, like, do you have a welcome sequence turned on when somebody comes to your website? Can they enter their email? It's the best 401k for your business. People pay millions for email databases. So grow your email list. Like, and then once somebody gets on your list, you could set up a great automation sequence, getting them into your funnel without you ever having to come online. And so I think it's a brilliant time to be an entrepreneur at this like intersection of technology and humanity. and making sure you are taking the classes, you're learning, you have the mentors, you're asking questions, what tools are other people using, and just really making sure you're staying like as the learner, like as a visionary. It's like our responsibility to make sure that we are on the cutting edge of whatever industry it is. And so if there's an AI tool out there that can make not only your life, but your customer's life easier, lean into that, because it will free you up as an entrepreneur to do more creative, cool things instead of like keeping you in the weeds. Like now my strategies, I used to have to talk to somebody for 90 minutes. Then I would have to listen to that again as I wrote a strategy. That was like 3 hours, 4 hours. And now I can take the transcript, upload it, give it my exact strategy template and say, turn this transcript into a business strategy using this template in less than 5 minutes.
It's amazing.
And it's incredible. And so I just am really moved by it. But again, you need the human prompts. You know, I need to be able to say, this is the strategy, this is the formula, et cetera. But take the time to set that stuff up. I think as business owners, especially talking about plumbers, electricians, we're probably reacting a lot and not taking that time to like invest in the operations and the structures and the marketing and the automations. I mean, you can set up text message automations, by the way, 98% open rate, who's not looking at their text. And so there's just a huge opportunity with automation meets marketing. And I would just encourage people to lean in to these strategies, because at the end of the day, you just need warm leads to sell to. So whatever it is you want to sell, whatever the service is, whatever the product is, if you can build a warm audience, 5 to 10 times that size that knows who you are, you're going to be successful. And so just take that time to build that funnel, to build those automations. And they're available to us now. That's the thing. Like a lot of these tools we couldn't access a few years ago. Now they're $99 a month. Like use that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Big companies had access, but the small businesses didn't.
Exactly.
That's gold, Krista. What you just provided is such incredible insight that most people don't even know exists. But the dollars, I mean, it has come down.
Like ManyChat, you guys, this is how people are doing it. And it excites me that there's so many tools out there for people that are at my stage in business that can afford it and use it to reach their clients like very, very easily.
So speaking of exciting, so what's next for Krista and Authentic Audience? What's on the horizon? Where do you want to take the company?
You know what, Eric? That's something we talk about all the time. I have a big vision of a collective. So whether that means merging with three other incredible female marketing agencies that do social media and email and becoming this like bigger collective, that's always something I've envisioned. But I'm enjoying the growth edges that come along with scaling. So many of people have told me not to do it. So many people warn me against the agency model. And I totally get it now, but I really do feel like scaling this agency is in my dharma. We are better than most when it comes to strategy and creative. And I think we're just turning that corner now. We're set, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, and we're starting to put ourselves up for awards, and we're starting to go to the trade, you know, the events and the conferences. Yeah. And it just takes time. And so I think I'm in a place now, instead of looking for that quick solve or that quick, you know, 2 million, 5 year revenue increase. It's like, where are we going in 5 years? And how am I like setting myself up now to be sustainable? And so it's growing my team, bringing on partners. You know, I've been working with some new mentors. There's things out there that I don't know. So there's possibilities that I'm not aware of. And so that's sort of what I'm calling it at this time, to take it to the next level. I know I need that next person, that next partner, that next, you know, whatever it is that's going to present itself. And it always does. And so I'm hopefully, you know, just going to scale it and grow it. But honestly, if I can just sustain, you know, where we are at our growth and our profit margins over time, it's just become something that I really love. And I'd also love to free up my time to do other things too. So, you know, that's the entrepreneur thing. You're an entrepreneur, means you like a lot of, you know, different things, but then you kind of get stuck into doing this one thing. And now I'm obsessed with it. So,
well, I'm impressed, and I've been able to watch your journey and your growth and the success you've had. And it's been really amazing. The growth, both personally, professionally, where your business has gone. I'm happy to be, you know, a part of it, happy to watch you, and happy to, you know, be a friend. And so I want to first thank you so much for doing this. And also let people know that if they wanted to reach you, it's authenticaudience.com.
.co.
.co, I apologize. So yeah, authenticaudience.co. And then you also have a podcast you do as well.
Yeah, the Authentic Audience podcast is on hold at this time. I have a lot going on. I have a business club of female business owners. There's almost 200 of us now. So I teach live business classes in there every week. We do business courses, things like that. So I'm really passionate about business education, making sure founders know about these tools. So I'm doing that a lot, and I'm growing the advertising piece. So really any support around advertising, email marketing, any platform we can run on, you know, we can run from Hulu to Snapchat and everything in between. And so wherever your people are, just know that you can reach them pretty easily. So focus on your product and your service and what you do to help people and your story, so that when you're ready to turn on that faucet, they'll convert.
Well, thank you, Kristoff. So appreciative.
Eric,
and
you're
so much
best.
Fun. Thanks again, Krista. Thank you for joining me on this episode. I'd like to invite you to subscribe to Business Underdog on your favorite podcast platform. By subscribing, you'll never miss an episode and you'll be the first to hear these incredible stories. Please be sure to follow us on social and visit our website at businessunderdog.com for episode updates, resources, and more. And thank you for listening today. Until next time, stay inspired, keep pushing forward, and embrace your inner underdog.